I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about senior Medicare patrols, the program designed to work with senior citizens to prevent health care fraud, mistakes, and abuse. We're going to talk about how widespread the problem of unscrupulous people preying on senior citizens and their health care benefits is, and what can be done about it. My guest will be Senior Medicare Patrol Director Nancy Stone. Please join this important conversation. You can call us at 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking really about sort of the ways that seniors can protect their health care benefits from fraud, mistakes, and other forms of abuse. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, my guest is someone who knows all about this, and that would be Nancy Stone, who is the director of Senior Medicare Patrol. Nancy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me, John.
Certainly. Well, let's start a little bit. Tell me a little bit about what Senior Medicare Patrol is.
Okay. We call them SMPs, so we abbreviate it. And every state has a Senior Medicare Patrol, and even Guam, Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands, and the District of Columbia. And this was started in 97 by the federal government to have an educational arm to help not only Medicare beneficiaries, but their caregivers and professionals that serve them learn how to protect themselves from all types of Medicare fraud and abuse and waste. Because, as you know, it's a huge, they estimate $60 billion a year. And that's just a real broad estimate in improper payments, fraud, abuse, and error or mistakes.
And who... You anticipated one of my questions, which was going to be, how big a problem is this? So we've got $60 billion. Presumably, that's for the nation, right?
That's for the nation.
Do they break it down by state at all, or is that?
I don't know the state. They have a hard time estimating even the federal fraud, estimates, because they say really it's 3 to 10% of healthcare expenditure, and Medicare spent $600 billion in 2012, and that's going to go up because 10,000 people a day are turning 65. They call it the silver tsunami. That's nationwide. And it is a problem here in Indiana as well. I mean, we may not be one of the highest fraud states, but in terms of, provider fraud or the big scooter store story. Mm. However, about 9 months ago, an organization called Mobile Docs, where they doctors go to senior centers, senior residential centers, that was shut down in not only Chicago and Detroit, but also Indianapolis by these. There's more of a police unit called HEAT teams. We are the educational unit.
Well, and let's talk a little bit. Well, I do want to drill down into, where the problems occur, what can be done about them. But let's talk a little bit first about the services that Senior Medicare
patrols offer,
provide SMP.
We are statewide, and so we cover every part of the state, and we partner with area agencies on aging and a couple of senior centers, because they have volunteers and staff that can help us spread the word. We only have about 2.5 full-time staff members for this to cover the state paid. Mm-hmm. So we rely on volunteers, and the program is predicated on using volunteers to help educate people on how, because it's such a big problem, it's kind of overwhelming. What can I do as an individual, mm-hmm. you know, beneficiary? But you can, you know, watch your Medicare summary notices and make sure those are like EOBs. If you're on a Medicare Advantage plan, it's an EOB.
But if it, probably there are some people who will not know what EOB is.
Explanation of benefits.
Okay.
That everybody who has insurance gets, mm-hmm. you know, after you have a service or you see a physician or you have a, you know, equipment ordered, it'll break down what was covered, you know, what wasn't paid, what your part is and that kind of thing. So really it's being more active in your health care and not just your health care, but also, you know, how it's paid for. Medicare is not free.
No.
You
know? Well, and that's the other thing I was going to ask is where does the funding for SMP comes from?
The funding is from the U.S. government. It's the United States, U.S. Administration for Community Living. Now, that used to be Administration on Aging, which more people are familiar with. But that's how we're funded. And every state is funded by the government.
And you say you've got
Department of Health and Human Services.
Yeah. You say you've got a staff here in the state of 2.5 people.
Including myself.
Including you. What's the budget? What's the budget for SMP? I mean, presumably you've got, if you're tracking down $10 billion worth of fraud annually.
$60 billion.
Yeah. I'm sorry. $60 billion.
Our funding was actually cut by 50. Well, one of our grants was cut 55%. So, you know, it's hard for me to estimate. But it, I mean, in Indiana, our funding is around, it's maybe $250,000. So not a lot, you know. And so we're grassroots.
Yeah.
And what we are trying to do really is not, when I took this job, my son said, well, you're on a patrol. Are you deputized? No.
Do you get a badge?
I am not. Yeah. I don't have a badge. Yeah. I don't carry a gun. You know, but I do. What we do is more presentations and outreach activities. But we also help people, you know, individually. If they think they have a potential fraud, we want them to call our 800 number. They will either be routed to one of our area agencies on aging that all partner in this because they are the gateway for senior services. And then it comes to me eventually, or they can call me directly.
We are talking about the subject of seniors and protecting their health benefits and figuring out strategies to do that. We're talking with Senior Medicare Patrol Director Nancy Stone. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the services that you provide for an individual. You say you do mostly presentations, but if people do have an individual question, first, how do they get in touch with you?
They can call me directly at 317-205-9201, or they can call our 800 number, which is 1-800-986-3505.
Go ahead and give them that again.
My number is 317-205-9201 and ask for Nancy Stone. And then, or you can call our 800 number toll free, 1-800-986-3505. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/INSP. INSMP.
Okay.
And so go ahead.
And is there, do you also have a URL, a website?
We do, where it's a little complicated, www.iaaa.org. We are housed in the Trade Association, which is the Indiana Association for Area Agencies on Aging. So it's I4As.
Four A's and then .org.
.org.
Okay. Yeah. And so let's assume now I've called and said, I need some help with my, you know, I see I've got a problem and with my explanation of benefits. What kind of services would you provide?
Well, what we do is help them. We don't really do investigations, but we can preliminarily see if this is something that is actually fraud. Sometimes what you get on your explanation of benefits or your Medicare summary notice is, maybe they don't understand that they did. They may not have seen that doctor, but that doctor read an X-ray. So we can help educate them individually. And we also partner with SHIP, which is the state health insurance program. Mm-hmm. And they help educate people on Medicare and, picking your plan in terms of eligibility and low-income eligibility programs. So we partner a lot with SHIP, and I am SHIP-trained. Mm-hmm. I am, however, not a Medicare expert. I don't get enough questions daily, on the real details of Medicare.
And by most people know of it as HIP, right? The Healthy Indiana Plan?
No, SHIP is a separate, and that is another program funded by ACL. Mm-hmm. Every state has a state health assistance, I think an insurance program is the actual, but they all go by SHIP primarily. Okay. That's housed here in Indiana at the Department of Insurance. And so they have also trained volunteers and paid staff members, primarily in the area agencies on aging, but also SECOA is the one in central Indiana you may have heard of. Mm-hmm. But the area agencies on aging have SHIP paid and unpaid counselors that really keep up on, all the Medicare regulations and what eligibilities are and so forth. So if I think they need some counseling, I can refer them to a SHIP counselor. If I think, yes, that seems kind of strange, not, legitimate, I get as much of the information as I can. I need a release of information. And then we can report that to the federal authorities, which most often is Office of Inspector General, or OIG. There's a lot of acronyms.
There is. How much of the work that you have to do? I mean, just in explaining that, A, you almost ran out of breath, and B, it is easy to get lost in the alphabet soup here of the acronyms and all of that. Is just sort of explaining to seniors where they go or whom they talk with when they have a problem.
And not just seniors, people in the, we're kind of the best kept secret, I say, because people even in the Division of Aging at the state level, if I say SMP, they're kind of like, oh yeah, and then I have to remind them. But I think what we try to do is really educate people at the, not necessarily individual, but the group level or individual level is the best. It is. It's a complicated. Medicare is vast and bureaucratic, and you can call 1-800-MEDICARE and get someone to look into your issue. And they should refer you to the S&P in your state. And because they, again, they're not experts. The person that you call on that, call line is not an expert in what is Medicare fraud and what could be potentially a mistake, and I may not know, but I'm going to err on the side of caution and refer it.
And is it, I'm thinking of this in terms of, it sounds like at least part of what you do is play traffic cop.
Exactly.
And say, okay, here, this is your problem. This is really who you need to talk to. In terms of, and why you need to talk with them.
Or we can, I have on occasion called the provider myself once I have a release of information to say the patient is very confused. I had one, IU School of Health here, patient was an ALS patient. And so I think they were just confused that it wasn't fraud. They insisted it was fraud, but it really wasn't. The proper protocols were met in terms of it was an occupational therapy consult, which can be, it's very confusing. I have a son who was a Riley baby, so I've had some personal experience. But many people, caregivers my age or younger, their parent, that may be the first dealings they have with a lot of medical serious medical procedures and complicated programs. So it gets real confusing.
And how many people does SMP serve here in Indiana over the course of a year? Do you track that? Or?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I could tell you if I'm back at my database, but we serve them on different levels. Like I say, we do a lot of community outreach, so we'll go to senior fairs and so forth, and then the individual group presentations. And I have those. I didn't numbers. Bring those statistics, but we do a fair amount with our volunteers. And so if anyone's interested, volunteer.
We are talking about ways seniors can protect themselves from healthcare abuse. My guest is Nancy Stone, Director of Senior Medicare Patrol. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about ways that seniors can protect themselves from scams, fraud, mistakes, and other forms of abuse in regard to their health care benefits. My guest is Senior Medicare Patrol Director, State Director Nancy Stone. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Okay, so we've established that we've got nationally a $60 billion problem. Estimates, you know, and that's probably on the high end.
No, it's probably on the low end.
Low end, okay. Well, because you said 3 to 10%. It was $600 billion,
but okay, but that was 2012.
Okay, and at the part of the problem is I'm guessing that it's like proving a negative to some degree, figuring out okay. So let's talk about what some of the common scams might be, or what the signs are. Well, let's start with what are some of the common scams, the things that seniors need to be alerted to.
The common scams for us in reference to strictly Medicare fraud is a phone scam. Seniors typically still have phones that they answer, they don't screen their call, landlines. And, so the scammers, they try to get their Medicare number because your Medicare number is most often your Social Security number and or your spouse's, if you were not a wage earner. And so they try to get that plus your bank card. And so they have all varying degrees of, scam. Programs like they'll say, with this new Obamacare, and every time open enrollment for the marketplace, they'll say, well, because of this, there are new regulations, and they sound very, authentic, and they may even have, Medicare in their name or some type of, allusion to Medicare. Medicare does not call anyone unless you would initiate a call and they're returning the call. But they do not call you. So if anybody calls you and acts like they're from Medicare and they need to confirm your number, well, first of all, if they're Medicare, why do they need to confirm your number? You don't need a new card because of Obamacare or, the Affordable Care Act. In fact, you can't be on an Affordable Care Act plan if you're on Medicare. So, in times of confusion is when they try to get the
numbers.
So
they call, and what will they say? Like, most seniors are savvy people, and they know if you just call up and say, oh, by the way, would you give me your Medicare number and your bank card number, they're going to think, okay.
Well, and they say,
what's the setup to this?
The setup is you need a new card because of Obamacare or whatever, and so we just need to confirm that number, and then, there's a small fee, and so we need your bank number, things like that. Or they just make it so confusing that people fall for it. And we get those calls a lot.
How many calls would you say during the course of a week? do you get on
we partner with all the area agencies mm-hmm. on aging, and I wouldn't say, I think a lot of the area agencies on aging, we call them AAAs, do a good job of educating people. So they may not fall for it, but they'll call and say, you know, I got this call. Or I got a call from IU Health that they were getting on their call lines. They were getting this that, you know, people were saying I needed a new card. But for the people, there's a lot of shame when people do fall for mm-hmm. this. And so they don't like to talk about it. And so, you know, they may have fallen for it, but they just don't bring it up. But we're here to kind of keep the conversation going. So people can say this happened to me and it's okay. And, you know, you call, we give them all the numbers to call and we report it. But once your Medicare number is compromised, you know, that they don't change your Medicare number. And so that can affect your benefits.
Once you've made the mistake, mm-hmm. you live with the consequences.
They will flag your account and, you know, be cognizant of that at the national level. But, you know, if somebody used your card fraudulently and mm-hmm. they exhausted, you know, let's say a physical therapy benefit, then, you know, that would affect you as a consumer, as the beneficiary.
Well, and it sounds like there's another problem, too, in that if they get your Social Security card and mm-hmm. and your bank card number, then
it becomes
they're off to the races, yes. and all of that. So what do you know, if you're worried about this, if you're a senior right now listening to this program and think, oh, boy, I got one of those calls, mm-hmm. what are some of the things you can do to check and see if you have been scammed or taken?
Well, you should definitely call us. You can call, anyone can call 1-800-MEDICARE, or you can get on mymedicare.gov if you're computer savvy. Check your records to make sure there's been no fraudulent, you know, charges, and you also report that to them, that you gave your card out, you know, mistakenly number, and then and call us as well, and then we can report it for you. But you can do all that yourself. But then, of course, if you've given your bank card and your Medicare card, then you need to call your bank and the local police department and so forth.
Close the account, move the money, get it away from where they can get at it. Yeah,
exactly. But one of the other big things that was highlighted on WTHR back in October is this durable medical equipment. Yeah. If you've received durable medical equipment, there are some marketing guidelines for providers, mm-hmm. but some of them are kind of maybe stepping over the line a little bit and almost badgering people to mm-hmm. order additional items. There are three guidelines. If you've signed a release, that durable medical equipment provider can call you mm-hmm. about anything, and they can call you. They can always call you about the item they've provided, whether you've signed anything or not. And then they can call you for 15 months after the last item that they've provided you. And so some of them are utilizing call centers to just really call these Medicare beneficiaries and encourage them, like, don't you need a back brace? Don't you have back pain? Well, what 80-year-old doesn't have back pain? And so then they will send a fax to the doctor and just say, your patient requested this. Now, most docs are pretty savvy not to just order it, but some of them are so busy and they don't have time to call and, you know, things
and
get ordered.
It and all of that.
Yes. And so what our kind of mantra is, talk to your doctor. If you think you need a test, don't go for these free heart scans or free, and nothing is free.
Yeah.
You know, nothing is free. Talk to your doctor if you have, develop that relationship with your doctor.
So in the case you just used of somebody calling and saying, okay, we just heard from your patient that they want a back brace, he or she wants a back brace, and doctor just should, does that meet the definition for fraud, or is it?
Well, it depends.
Or does it fall into that gray area? Because technically the patient did say yes mm-hmm. and all of that. There are people out there who would just call that really aggressive salesmanship.
And we are in the process of reporting a lot of these because even if they fall within the guidelines, we're in the process of writing a congressional letter because we think some of those guidelines need to be tightened up. The fraud may be in that they ordered a back brace, but they received a lesser back brace than what was ordered.
What they were obligated to provide.
And so most of the doctors now are just sending those faxes back. But again, they don't have time if they get 100 faxes a week or, you know, to administratively even reply that stop badgering me. But that people can, and we're working with the Attorney General's office on this too, because unsolicited faxes, there are some regulations
issues
about that.
Yeah, that falls into some do not call areas too. We are talking about the way that seniors can protect themselves from fraud, scams, mistakes, other forms of abuse in regard to their health care benefits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Bill did and just shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Bill's question is, what about a scenario where a caregiver is committing fraud? Do local prosecutors' offices aggressively pursue investigations of these scenarios even when clear-cut evidence is presented? We have a case in my family where clear-cut evidence of fraud was presented, but no action was taken.
And I don't know what type of fraud he's talking about. You mean the caregiver was using the Medicare number or, you know, I'd have to have a little more information. But I do think...
Is that scenario, though, where... are there scenarios in which caregivers are the ones who take advantage of the seniors? And, Bill, if you'd like to amplify a little bit here and follow up with an email, give us a few more specifics, we'll see if we can get an answer to your question.
There are definitely, you know, problems with caregivers and families, even family members. Not just necessarily Medicare fraud, but all types of, you know, financial exploitation. And we are actually going to be addressing this in April. On April 23rd, we're going to have a program at the JCC. Mm-hmm. And I think the Secretary of State, Attorney General's office will be there. And someone from the prosecutor's office in Marin County is going to be there to talk about. We need these experts because I don't know. I think, you know, the problem often is the family is at odds of if they should report it or not.
What are, you know, in the way, let's assume here, and I'll take it, make it almost a hypothetical. Say I have an elderly parent and I'm providing care for that elderly parent. And I am completely unscrupulous about that. You know, if I want to scam that situation and take advantage, what is one of the common ways I do that in terms of the Medicare benefits?
In terms of Medicare, I guess it would be ordering for services that the beneficiary doesn't receive. You know, getting a kickback from a provider that, you know, you'll say that the beneficiary is homebound, you get a doctor somehow to document that this beneficiary, maybe the beneficiary truly is homebound and could get some like physical therapy, occupational therapy, you know, intermittent skilled nursing, those kinds of things, and then fraudulently billing Medicare on behalf of this provider. I have not heard of that personally in the 2 years I've been with this program, but I'm not saying it doesn't happen.
You said most of the scams are phone ones where they call seniors. What are some of the other ones, though, that occur that seniors need to be alerted to?
Well, I think, you know, providers are not, you know, it may not be a scam. It could be a mistake. The definition of fraud, you have to prove intentionality. Mm-hmm. And so, but... you know, there have been providers that have, you know, fraudulently billed on a regular basis. And so, I can't speak to any in particular. But I think that's when, you as the consumer have a right to question every bill on that you receive. And I think people are getting better about that. But, you know, Medicare, typically the, you know, the cost share is not as high as if you were. Of course, you know, those of us on private insurance, our deductibles are higher, our copays are higher. But this is going to affect the integrity of Medicare. And so we have to look at, you know, any charge, especially if it seems. We had a case, actually, it was one of our part-time employees' husband, where he had a back procedure on one side. Mm-hmm. He had back pain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had one side done, and it really didn't help, so he canceled the second side. Well, when he got the bill for both sides, and he called the provider. And right away they said, oh, well, we just set up the billing that way. Now, that's maybe more abuse, mm-hmm. abusive practices. You know, you don't bill for something that you haven't done yet. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these codes are very complicated, ICD-9 codes and, you know, medical billing codes. And so things can either be a mistake or they can, you know, inadvertently bill. That's just their routine practice. They may not be trying to defraud the government.
Well, and if we are talking about the ways that that seniors can be taken advantage of in regard to their health benefits, if you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. What are the things, let's assume that you are a scrupulous caregiver here, though, and or family member for a senior, and you sort of want to help and create a protective net for your mom, your dad, you know, your grandparents in some cases, or whatever. What are some steps that you could take to make sure that your parents are not being taken advantage of here? Or that there are just no mistakes, because it sounds like a lot of the problem is just error as well, that it's a system that's set up, like a lot of systems, with certain codes. Somebody keys in the wrong code, and suddenly, instead of a $200 bill, you've got a $20,000 one or whatever, and your benefits have exploded.
Exactly. I think there's a couple of different things. We have a tool called a personal healthcare journal, where we work a lot with elder law attorneys, and they mm-hmm. say one of the biggest things in times of crisis is that the actual caregivers, daughters, sons, grandchildren, don't really know, like, the list of medications a person's on or the doctors that they see. I mean, they know maybe the primary doctor. So this healthcare journal not only gives you a space to write down mm-hmm. the prescriptions your loved one is on and the doctors they see, but also anytime they see someone or get a service, they can, you know, write this down. And then when you get the Medicare summary notice, you can reconcile it like we used to do checkbooks back in the day and make sure that, you know, you were actually billed for what your loved one received. So that's number one. Number two is just talking to your loved one and making sure that they don't do business on the phone. And we think, you know, our parents would know better, but as you age, they're the part of the brain that distinguishes, you know, trust and that kinds of things is diminished. Neuropsychologists have studied this. And that's why a lot of times your parent who was a business person and really savvy, but as they get into their 80s and 90s may, you know, or even 70s, may do things that, you know, you would do business over the phone with a, you know, a scammer.
Well, my guess is it sounds like these operations are pretty slick, that they target, like, you know, I know with the senior citizens I know, often, you know, there are fatigue points in their days where they're more susceptible to stuff. I'm sure they try to target at those times, too.
They do, and often many of them develop a relationship. We've shown the WFYI-produced Fleeced documentary numerous times, and that's, you know, some of this is more consumer scams, but it all factors in. And they develop a relationship with that person.
We are talking about ways that we can protect seniors from scams, fraud, mistakes, and other abuse in regard to their health care benefits. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the ways that seniors can be taken advantage of in regard to health care scams, fraud, abuse, even just errors. My guest is Senior Medicare Patrol State Director Nancy Stone. And just when we were in that last segment, we got a question from email question from a listener named Bill. And if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Bill asked, you know, if there was aggressive investigation of caregivers when there's evidence of fraud. We asked him to follow up because we didn't really know the context. He says the caregiver in question embezzled the patient's 401k proceeds for the explicitly stated purpose of exhausting those funds in order to apply for Medicaid services.
Okay, and that I would have to defer to someone, you know, maybe the Attorney General's office or even, you know, Secretary of State, because they have, that's not really in my bailiwick, you know, but I think it needs to be reported.
Is there a target? I mean, it sounds like, yes, there are ways to make, I'll use the word steal, a lot of money through Medicare. But it sounds like part of the problem also is just that there's a pathway like here, you know, whoever it was that did this went after somebody's entire retirement fund, everything they'd saved up over a lifetime of working, or much of one fund at least where they'd done that. Is that often what goes on here, that the Medicare is part of it, but, or in this case, it was Medicaid apparently?
Well, and I think that's something an elder law attorney could maybe help them with. People don't realize Medicare does not cover long-term care. So if your loved one is needing, you know, long-term care, like i.e. nursing home, Medicare only covers a certain number of days. And after that, you have to pay out of pocket. And that's why I think a lot of seniors are afraid of, you know, spending money, because they want to have enough. Now, after you, once you're at a certain level and there are ways to, you know, protect some assets, and an elder law attorney can address that, or even the area agencies on aging, they can call them. They have, resource center that can, aging and disability resource centers that can help them figure out who to call. They're a resource center. So I think, you know, maybe the, you know, who knows what the scenario is that would take some investigation.
But the recommendation here would be talk to an elder care attorney, or
and maybe even start with your area agency on aging, and who can you?
And if they called, called your office, they could, you could route them there.
Yes, and you know, there's i4aaa.org, and there is a map. You can link to a map and find your county or the county your loved one is in. And it'll have the numbers for that area agent. There are 16 area agencies in the state. But, again, there are Adult Protective Services representatives that could maybe be called in. You know, if it's not too late, I don't know. But there are resources for that.
And I should say, Bill, I am sorry that you are dealing with this.
Yes.
We are talking about the ways that seniors can be taken advantage of in regard to their health care benefits. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is actually my grandmother. She is it's not necessarily that Medicare is taking advantage of her. It's that someone else who should be on Medicaid and supposedly is taking advantage of her. The question, I suppose, well, let me put it this way. It's been over a year since she started giving money to this family, and particularly a woman about 20 years younger than her in her 60s who has medical issues, and my grandmother does not yet. But it's been at least $14,000 that my grandmother has given to this woman so far. My grandmother used to be a very financially stable and responsible person, but over the last couple of years, she's stopped balancing her checkbook. She's not checking anything anymore. She has no idea how much money she has. The bank has called her multiple times to say that she's overdrawn, and it's because she is constantly giving money to this woman who asks for money for her medical bills while she supposedly waits for Medicaid to kick in. I just found out she bought a $20,000 car for the woman's daughter so the lady could get herself to work. And we just can't get her to stop. And we're worried about where her mind is going and that no one considers her to be incompetent. And that leads me to the question of how does one get a power of attorney, for example, in such a thing like, or is that even possible?
That's a tough question. Thank you very much for presenting a good question, though, Michelle. And again, I am sorry that you are dealing with this.
Thank you.
Certainly.
I think, again, I would defer to an elder law attorney, maybe have a family meeting with, you know, your grandmother and all the family members, and or just get his advice on how to handle this. Because this gets very complex. And again, you know, unless she's declared, and, you know, there's all types of guardianship. And so I really can't, I'm not an attorney. I can't speak to that. But you could also call your area agency on aging and they could refer you to reputable ones in your area. What county do you live in?
Actually, she's off the
line
now.
Okay.
But let me reframe just Michelle's question here real quickly, because it sounds like this is not an uncommon scenario. I could see you nodding your head when Michelle was telling the story, like you've heard this story before.
Mm-hmm.
How do you structure that kind of conversation if you're a parent, you know, a child or a grandchild of a senior, and you see him or her doing something, what may be, it sounds like Michelle's grandmother just wants to help someone, but there's at least the possibility that Michelle's grandmother is also being seriously taken advantage of here. You know, how do you structure that conversation and say, you know, Grandma?
I think that's when you really do need to get some professional help, and even maybe the primary physician. And as she said, the financial people were calling her, you know, or calling some family member to alert them to this. These are all red flags that, and I think it's hard in a family. One of the families that was highlighted in the Fleeced video, the two daughters, they would not talk to their father. He mortgaged his everything he had, and he was a business owner. I mean, so it was substantial. And the attorney general's office tried to get money back for him. He was into a lottery kind of a situation, you know. But this is when I think it's very hard when your father's been maybe the patriarch and, you know, or in this case, the matriarch, and she's made her decisions. But I think at some point you have to have a conversation that we need to just look at your finances or whatever, look at everything and talk to a respected professional, be that an attorney or maybe the physician, you know, somebody that the older adult respects as well. And just talk about how can we maybe manage this a little better with some, you know, with some input from family members.
Is that, I mean, it sounds like you've got,
and I don't have an expert in this, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got two kind of dynamics here, though. You've got the financial legal piece of it, but there's also that emotional piece that you kind of alluded to, and I can look forward to. It's not going to be a happy day for me when you know, my children come to me or my grandchildren and say, you know, Dad or Granddad, we really don't think you can take care of yourself anymore to some mm-hmm. degree. I mean, I know that's not the way they're going to frame it or that anyone does frame that conversation, but I suspect that is the way the senior hears it, is, okay, you don't think I'm capable of doing these things for myself anymore. What is there a way, at least in the emotional piece of that, to structure the conversation so that you can even get them to the lawyer
or to a physician, or whatever.
Yeah.
That, and I have not had any experience in that, so it's really hard for me to, but I think the area agencies on aging, I hate to keep referring back to them, but I think they would have, you know, they might have some guidance on that. I do think it has to be a family conversation, and you know, there are ways to structure mm-hmm. the limits that yeah. you set. And even elder law attorneys, I know we had one here the last time I was on, mm-hmm. and they could really talk better about that. But I think, you know, in order to protect everyone, get some professional
Is there, in terms of that, it sounded, if I understood Michelle's story correctly, and it, you know, again, it does seem to be a fairly common one. I thought what she was saying is her grandmother was ordering things for this other person's medical care through Medicare. Does that?
No, I didn't hear that.
I thought I heard her say that.
Well, that would definitely
meet the definition for fraud or
yes.
for some legal abuse.
Well, yes, because then,
and who's
you know,
liable there? Would it be the grandmother or would it be the person who was asking her to make the
I mean,
the
I
orders?
Think, again, that would have to go through like a Department of Justice review or the Office of Inspector General. I mean, but it could impact the beneficiary, the Medicare beneficiary. Because like I said before, if her number is being used, you know, to exhaust a, mm-hmm. you know, a benefit, then maybe when and if she ever needed it, she could not get it. I thought she was saying she was giving her money until that woman's Medicaid kicked in. And there are some, you know, Medicaid is another real complex program. So I don't know, you know, what the situation is. But, you know, often older adults get asked by, you know, family friends or family, you know, or caregivers, paid caregivers to help them out financially. And so I think that's a real issue. And I think it just, you have to have a conversation and somebody has to kind of oversee what's going on. I think.
And real quickly, assuming this is big business, right, that we're talking about $60 billion a year by 2012 numbers, the estimates. Mm-hmm. So it's probably higher now.
And that's improper payments.
Yeah.
So some of that, if it was a mistake, like if you go to the hospital, we had a case we just heard about this after the fact. And a lot of what we do is preventive, you know, so helping people realize you can question, you can call the provider and say, I don't understand this bill and ask for, you know, more detailed. But, you know, if people are rushed to a hospital, we had a case where she said her mother was only there about an hour before she died. And the hospital billed, you know, MRIs and CAT scans and all kinds of expensive procedures. So she called the hospital when she got the bill and just said, you know, there's no way you would even have time to get all that done. She was only there an hour. Oh, that was a mistake. We'll take it off. So I think it all goes back to just being, you know, an active participant, whether you're the caregiver reading the bills or the beneficiary looking at the,
but
you
where,
know,
yeah, where I was going with the question, though, was what are the penalties for this? Well, if you do commit fraud,
yes,
in regard to
and
Medicare,
like I said, we report it, and then yeah. that gets handled by, you know, and we may not even get a final judgment on that, but the Department of Justice looks at that, and it is, they are making strides in terms of apparently because of this, it's called a Medicare Fraud Strike Task Force, and they call them heat teams, and they And I think these are, again, are 2012 figures, but they've charged 1,900 people, you know, with Medicare fraud, and they've saved $6 billion. So they, you know, they will suspend. Also, they've suspended enrollments of new providers or, you know, these fraudulent providers. So there are there. But it is pretty bureaucratic, I will say. It's a federal.
So do they put them
investigation?
I mean, is it you know,
or they'll shut them down?
Shut them down. They put them out of business. Do they send them to jail too?
I mean,
okay.
And there are fines. And you know, I think we've all heard about the scooter store story, and that was a national thing. But if you report, you know, just if somebody from, you know, Fountain County tells me they got a call, so I report it, and they'll see trends, and then maybe that'll be part of a larger investigation.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Dr. Randolph. Says, fraud and abuse often starts in Washington, D.C. Laws and regulations are implemented, followed by more government oversight and expenditures, which cause burdens on all citizens and especially upon seniors. These rules and regs raise medical costs. The electronic health records cost doctors on average $100,000 each. Now the government is making the medical community switch codes used to report care. Doctors now have to shell out more money to have the computers reprogrammed. Guess who winds up paying for this? Is the problem too much regulation, as Dr. Randolph would seem to argue?
Well, I think that, you know, I'm not, that's above my pay grade, I think, you know, but I can understand that feeling. And I think even just reporting things, you feel like it's so bureaucratic. But this is the system we have. And so I think then you need to talk to your legislators, you know, and talk to your senators and congressmen about how can we, you know, streamline this so it's not so burdensome. Because I think even just for the consumer, it's hard to know what is covered and what do I have to do, you know, to make sure I get things are ordered correctly.
Has the fact that the healthcare debate has become so politicized made it easier or harder for seniors to ask for help, to throw up their hand and say, okay, I have a question?
I think, to me, it's a bipartisan issue because we're all paying for it. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican or you're in your 20s. It's affecting everyone. And so we've got to get it. I think this should be the number one agenda on our, you know, for our government is to streamline Medicare. And even if, you know, for the providers too, I know there are a lot of, and I don't know much about that at all. I just know there are a lot of regulations they have to follow and that can be burdensome.
We've got just a few seconds left. If a senior wants to protect himself or herself from just mistakes or fraud, what's the one thing he or she should do?
I think you need to read your Medicare summary notice or your explanation of benefits and question. Don't be afraid to question that bill. If you don't understand what you were billed for, call the provider.
That'll have to be the last word. Nancy Stone, thank you very much for joining us. Also like to thank all of our listeners and the folks who brought us the great questions. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.